Something is out there. Something is out there.
Is Goyfar hitting the hogs, hit with a brick, Grim Sleeper, GOP, Tea Party, Lofner, and Byron Jost. Top story today, hitting the hogs. 52-year-old Andrew Lee Natch was arrested for having sex with hogs in Greenwood, Mississippi. A local farmer became suspicious when, during a routine examination, a veterinarian told him that four of his hogs had a vaginal infection.
Your hogs, sir, I don't know how to put this. They've been unchaste.
Suspected some pervert was diddling them, so he arranged for the local cops to stake out the farm by installing surveillance cameras. On December 3rd, 2010, they struck pay dirt. Nash was caught diddling the hogs.
Anyone know the race of this gentleman?
Jewish, I think.
A Jewish pig fucker. Like a double crime. When did this story pop up?
Well, it's been a week or two ago. It seems like he went along the Yazoo River there. You could just picture him, just kind of like the Underground Railroad or something, navigating along the Yazoo River. I bet in winter it's pretty humid down there, real beautiful. And they were prize hogs. They weren't just regular hogs. So I don't know, they're like 700-800 pounds. They're just almost as big as a regular black or white Hottentot. But I can only wonder what it was like. It must be like sandpaper. I know that happened to me once, and not with a hog, but it was a white girl, but just a little bit rough. I don't know, it was like 400 grade sandpaper or what, maybe worse. So you kind of have to, on one level, admire his go-get-em-ism or something. But the
just
poor guy...
For the record, Craig, you are not personally a pig fucker.
No. I was speaking about one time I was with one woman and she was just a little too drunk. But I did notice the next day I was kind of red and swollen. So it must have been awful for Andrew Lee. And
well, I might add he didn't go a hunting along the river bottoms of Mississippi. He picked him some farm red hogs, so they weren't getting away that fast.
Oh, they're prize winners. That's what the farmer said. They're prize winner pigs. You know, I was listening to some talk radio there quite a bit here in the last few months, and one time they played Arianna Huffington, and all of a sudden they switched to, who is it, Ava Gabor with a Petticoat Junction. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's really loud. It sounds kind of like a harpsichord or something. But anyway, that's what we need, I guess, for Andrew Lee. And I've been calling down there. I've got four or five videos. They won't let me get through. And every time I call down, it's like talking to a black woman on one of these 1-800 helplines for you name it, computer tech, the post office, everything, government. And they get, you know, you'll hear two or three people talking in the line. The lines are crossed over, and they act startled. You even have the temerity to ring them up. And then they say, well, who you want? And they said, do you know his manager? I said, he's like a boxer. He's got a manager. I said, no, I don't know.
His publicity agent.
Yeah, they got a, you know, it's kind of like I don't know, Cool Hand Luke down there in the Delta prison it is. But they won't let me talk to him so far. I told him we're going to get with him, Mr. Obama, and we want to get him out of there on a, get him a pardon or at least a reprieve. And they wouldn't, they won't even give me the time of day. So the last time I asked to talk to a warden, I think I'm getting somewhere. I may call back later today to get the warden.
Well, I'm telling you, all this new technology, these surveillance cameras are fucking the nigga up. They're getting it all on tape, chronicling their behavior, not just there, but in South Africa. Everywhere those cameras are rolling.
What was it, the hole in the ground they were going after?
Yeah, they were screwing the dirt. Screwing the dirt in South Africa caught on tape. How about that? Now, have either of you gentlemen ever been charged with even one count of unnatural intercourse?
I have not, and I'd like to say these antis get in there and they actually type this stuff. They make it up. They've even been saying that that's why I got to, you know, they'll just say anything. No, I have not. Of course, I have not. But it's pretty interesting to see that a guy would choose a 700 or 800 pound hog. I think he did go after something like a, I don't know, a 16-year-old Doberman or something.
Wouldn't you think that a hog might, like, fight back or resist or crush the guy or something?
Yeah, maybe he likes that. Maybe he likes some. Maybe like some fighters, you know.
I have a number of technical questions that really aren't addressed by these articles.
No, they're not.
I think he raped them in the pen.
What STD did these pigs walk away with?
That's right. They could have to give them expensive AIDS drugs because they're prize winners. They might have to have those for life. And that's really a burden on the farmer. Maybe Obama can give them some cash.
It cannot be cheap to feed large hogs retroviral daily, I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah. And we all know hogs and rats get the same diseases as we in many cases. You know, they cross over.
Yeah, I read some story the other day about just dozens of diseases you can get from your own house pet, letting them lick you or sleep with you. Rather disturbing, I must say.
Yeah, well, I don't think any scientists have ever research the transmitting of AIDS via cannibalism, but then again, we never had a case of a hog with AIDS.
I don't know if it's AIDS, though. I suspect it's something. It's probably some like chlamydia or something, some kind of biological thing, as opposed to like virus. If I had to guess, but I'm kind of wondering. You know, if there's any value to reporting, it's in reporting all the details. Now, like, he's charged with 12 counts of unnatural intercourse. So, did these sicko cops and this farmer just sit there and watch this guy? All right, we got him for what? I think we need a little more, though. Let's wait a little while, see what happens. And, like, 30 minutes later, well, I think we're probably up to 4 or 5 counts. But you know what? I don't think we need to stop at half a dozen. I think we need a full baker's dozen.
They're probably laughing more than we are.
Did the guy had to be going nuts while they're screwing his pigs. Yet they hung around long enough for him to be charged with 12 counts of unnatural intercourse.
All those details are really interesting. A guy could talk to him. They could say, what does it feel like, you know, and what's going through your mind, and did you ever think to strangle the hog afterwards and kill it? That might further the sexual delight. There's a lot of things that could be embellished, and they just don't do it. That's
right.
That's
a brilliant neo-Rabelaisian take on the screwing of the porkers. What was it, wiping his ass on a dead goose? Something like that? But you're right. It is an interesting question what it's like to screw a pig. And we know that this nigger is privy to inside information on that count.
And plus he'd have a colorful language, a description, you know. It would be like, I don't know, William Styron's The Confessions of Nat Turner or something. It'd be very beautifully written.
I guess it's warm enough down there in Mississippi this time of year that screwing hogs is a pleasant nocturnal occupation. It's a little bit cold down there, even though it's, you know, deep south.
In the deep south.
Who's to say? I think these hogs did their service in rape prevention. They kept him off the white women.
With the hogs now that they've been polluted.
They'll probably dig a little mass grave somewhere and just shoot them.
Probably the leftists will come over to the pen at the fair and all those educated white women will say, is this her? It's such a pity. And they'll go and shake their heads and they'll be they might have a candlelight vigil.
Where is Oprah with these hogs?
That's right. And Oprah's new sister, the one they just discovered, speaking of newly discovered hogs, Did you hear about that? They just found her sister given up at birth, and she waddled out. There she was. Yeah. Another Hottentot star is born.
You know, but think about this. This guy is 52 years old. What does that tell you?
He's got good sexual stamina.
He's got natural Viagra.
Yeah, but do you think these are the first pigs that he has commingled with?
He might have switched animal the way these white girls do.
I'm guessing this is not his first time fucking pigs, frankly. I am just an old man. He's a veteran. He's pro.
How long did it take him to rack up 12?
The story back in the day, back in Great Falls, Virginia, there was a, I think it was also a nigger who was screwing horses. The same type of thing as this. He was going back to the stall repeatedly, and the owner kept finding the horse. The horse was disturbed. And after a while, she figured like something was up with the horse, and sure enough, they caught somebody who kept coming back to the stall to screw the horse. So this kind of thing does happen.
Stovepipe Johnson, the comedian, not this. The Confederate Civil War fellow, he was on YouTube a lot, and he used to say that you have to have a like a milking stool to stand up there high enough for a horse. That's what he said. But of course, Stovepipe worked for the NSA. He's not as dumb as he pretends. He worked regular hogs after a while, and then he got more and more obsessed with beauty and went for the prize winners. But
now, are you two inferring this is not an isolated incident?
I don't think. Pig fucking is something you just pick up as a hobby at age 52. If you're a pig fucker, it goes way, way back.
You don't think he was just bored one day?
Now, he is a nigger, so that is possible. I'm suspecting he's probably screwed some dogs along the way. He probably started with dogs and worked his way up to pigs, if I had to guess.
Now, do you think Moonshine was involved, or was he just straight sober?
If you ask me, and this is pure speculation, unmediated through any actual personal experience, I'm thinking that if you're going to fuck very large barnyard animals, you want to have all your wits about you, given that those wits are few enough if you're black to start with. No, I don't think he was drunk.
He was horny. They need to have an MTV Murray Rothstein special about him, you know, and what's that new one, Spike TV? They need to really give him some laurels and some attention after he gets out. Presumably he won't do that long just for a fucking animal, that's no big deal these days. And they could have rap songs composed about him, and the white women would get off on that. That might start a new trend for some of these women, a certain percentage of them, who go for that sort of thing. Black men.
Hey, Craig, why would this be, though? Why would they initially set his bond at $600,000 and then reduce it to $60,000?
Making a show, I suppose. There's a lot of farmers down there. They take agrarian issues seriously. They don't want people messing with
them. Yeah, but so he can put up $6,000 and escape until the trial. Right.
Well, you have to sell the house, sell the shanty.
You usually got
to
put up $10,000.
Especially in this dire real estate market, that ain't easy to get $6,000 for it.
Yeah, I'm thinking that some guy screwing pigs probably is not well healed.
But he knew how to live. I mean, he may have been limited by finances, but I don't know what you'd call him.
Well, I'm sure somebody could make him more human than all of us. I think he has the qualifications to be nominated by the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Andrew Lee Nash, adventure journalist. He'd be a good one.
Yeah, he doesn't even have a nigger name. He has a perfectly decent name.
Probably the English owned him years ago.
Put him in a suit, make him the mayor.
Anyway, all this pretensions that we're all a big happy family here in the Quaw, once in a while these little things like this happen, like about every 12 seconds.
Well, isn't Mississippi about the blackest state in the country?
Yeah, it's real beautiful. I took a bus through there a few years ago. It's very beautiful pines along the central or central south there. Very beautiful.
And I remember some interstate, right?
Yeah, it goes right through there, as I recall. It's very beautiful.
What you notice is, like you say, is that basically there's a couple openings for like Jackson and one other city, and other than that, it's just a lot of pine forest. from what I could tell from that, from the interstate, taking it down there towards Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not over.
As long as you're not in the humid time of year, it's real beautiful, too.
Yeah.
But it's the poorest state in the country. West Virginia is second poorest, they claim.
And unlike West Virginia, which is almost all white, it's at least 50% black, I believe.
Yeah, and we used to make that point in the NA about how if everything is poverty is linked to crime, then why is everything so orderly in West Virginia, mostly more than any other state, on a per capita basis?
Indeed.
Maybe the Dakotas equal it or something.
Well, it's not as orderly as we'd like in Columbus, Ohio. There we have a 17-year-old boy at a library. He happened to catch the attention of two Negroes who conned him into assisting them with some computer issues. He left the library at 6:55 p.m. The two Negroes followed him to the bus stop and then attacked. One of the Negroes threw the brick, hitting the victim in the head and knocking him unconscious. The suspect stole the teen's two laptops. Columbus police said,
"This is a good example of no good deed going unpunished.
That bitch made me want to play."
And how important and difficult it is to help someone. It seems like an easy thing. Oh, they need help. I'll help them. Well, who are you helping?
That bitch made me want to play.
Are you actually doing their thing for them, or are you in some way genuinely aiding them? I think there's a lot of, you know, on one hand, this is just a simple news story of nigger assault, which happens all the time, every day. But if you want to tease a deeper lesson out of it, it's that it goes back to that Christian thing about, and I've been harping on this lately a lot on the forum because it's important and relevant, which is that the Christian church dogmatically teaches that every single thing with a face is human, has an everlasting soul, and is spiritually equal in the eyes of God.
That bitch hit me with a plate!
But when you actually act on that theory, this is the sort of thing that results. You're trying to save the niggers. You know, you help them, and then they kill, rape, assault you. And so, until we get past that dogma, we are leaving ourselves open to predation. And we have no means intellectually to resist. So all we end up doing is these candlelight vigils after they murder us, or these, oh, they shouldn't have done that. Well, if there's a categorical problem, there can only be a categorical solution. And if enough niggers are so disposed as to engage in this kind of behavior, you know, fucking pigs or hitting people over the head with bricks or raping people or murdering them, then we don't need them around. So we ought to deal with them as a race, overlooking the individual aspects and simply categorically dismiss them. See, my point is, it is Christians call immoral. Say you're a python, right? Here's an equivalent I was thinking of. Say you're a particular species of python, a subspecies. And your eggs will only hatch if you brood over them at exactly 72.8 degrees. And then say the church of the holy python comes along and says it's immoral for you to brood over your eggs, you know, to hover them, bury them in leaves and put your body over it. It's immoral for you to brood your eggs at 72.8 degrees. And you say, well, look, that's the only temperature at which the eggs are viable. If I don't keep them at precisely that, you know, within a very small fraction of that degree, they will not hatch, we will die out. And you're saying that it's immoral, the conditions under which my kind not only thrives but simply survives are immoral to sustain or to prefer or to preserve, then you're basically saying that the only way to be moral is to commit racial genocide.
Well, that's the problem, because your kind is pythons.
Yeah, and we're white pythons, and that's what we need. What we need is a white space where there aren't any kind of niggers around. We don't need this kind of garbage. And we can't. We are not the brother's zookeeper. Now, in the Bible, it says, the question is, am I my brother's keeper? And the answer is supposed to be yes. But the real answer is no. We are not the brother's zookeeper. We cannot turn niggers into humans. Christianity is another version of alchemy. They claim by their doctrine they can turn niggers into human beings, but they can't. Now the church is majority non-white. You think those non-whites are going to be producing Bachs and Beethovens and all these different cultural things the church likes to claim are the product of its teachings? Hell no, they're not. They're still going to be the same useless niggers they always were.
Any of our listeners out there, they should read The Anti-Christian written by Nietzsche. and realized now, as he did, and he called Christianity the venereal disease of Rome, which more or less brought about its downfall.
Here's the best way to... The church hates physical promiscuity, they say, and they say correctly that it entails a lot of problems. Psychological, physical, destruction of individuals, that's true. But what about spiritual promiscuity? You know, oh, love everyone, love, a universal love. Love is, it's like a Beatles song. Love is, no, love's not the solution. Love is something that belongs within its sphere like every other emotion. Their church's spiritual promiscuity is destroying our race. We're supposed to love niggers, says who? What's lovable about them? We don't need to love niggers. Niggers need to become lovable. They can't do it. All they can do is fuck pigs. That's their idea of love. And now, oh, we're going to cure them. We're going to save them. We're going to give our little girls sociology degrees and send them into prisons to save these niggers by rubbing some lotion on them or talking the right words to them. You know what? They're not dark-stained white people. They're not Cajun white people like you get in a restaurant. They're fucking niggers. And if you believe God created things, then God created niggers, and niggers are not white people. They are different. Do you not even love them enough to take them seriously enough to see them for what they are? No, because you're a fucking idiot. You listen to Padre McPeely, who's over there trying to screw kids. Niggers, you're equal. We're all spiritually equal in the eyes of God. Bullshit. We're not spiritually equal. There is no equality anywhere. And people need to learn that.
People, only 8% of the world population falling fast. We've got countries like Uganda that have over 90 million Negroes and are booming.
Yeah, we're ages. Where did I see, maybe you guys saw too, the stats on the population of Nigeria and how it just incredibly exploded from, God, I don't know, like 30 million up to, I'm getting the figures wrong, but it was some incredible rate, 30 million to like, I don't know, 150 million or something. These countries are just teeming. The white medicine and white food have just allowed them to explode. Basically, everybody who's not a nigger hates niggers. And that includes Asians. It includes those mystery meats from kind of, you know, southwestern Asia.
Polynesians.
Indians. A lot of them who run like 7-Eleven, they fucking hate niggers. I used to live in a mixed area in St. Louis for a brief time, and, you know, I'd go into the 7-Eleven every few days and there would always be me and some niggers. And they always treated me with great respect, the people running the store. And you could just tell they just fucking despise the niggers who lived around there. And that's just natural. Everyone hates niggers. And it's only insane ideological cult that promote the view that natural hatred of niggers is a bad thing or makes you immoral. Well, if you're not strong enough to resist the church calling you immoral for hating niggers, then you're probably not strong enough to aid the white cause. No one cares what the church thinks, and if you do care, you shouldn't care. It's just it's weakness and destructive, and you have to see through it and over it and past it and get around it.
I think oftentimes people are afraid to go against their neighbor or people who have some nominal power over them or, you know, direct relatives, and so after a lifetime of that, you're pretty much washed up with any logic or fairness or reasoning, really. You can pretend there are some few people who, you know, just as there are blacks on the TV news speaking well, or scientists who happen to be Christian. In fact, later today, he wanted to talk about one of those. He ended up committing suicide, but he was a Christian and a geneticist. So there are all these anomalies, and they kind of run the gamut of human experience, and so therefore people rationalize that away. I wish, Alex, you'd speak a little bit about, you know, the ones on TV news or Thomas Sowell and these sorts of people, because a lot of people, it sounds hackneyed for us to talk about it perhaps, but they know that. And they'll, you know, result to the one in a thousand.
Yeah, they want to create a false world on TV, and they do that by depicting niggers always as judges or as senior executives in government or private bodies, and their fictional stuff. And they also do it, as you said, on like local news. They're always, even here in Kirksville, they'll have like a nigger who team with a white female. It's typically how they do it through every small town in the Midwest. That's what you'll see on the news station. And they condition white animals to regard niggers as natural authorities through this kind of garbage, even though we know that the average nigger is utterly useless. He's likely to be the type, you know, hitting someone with a brick who's trying to help him. But, you know, you can find enough niggers to put them on TV and they can read off a teleprompter well enough. you know, and they don't look hideous, and that's good enough to persuade people, or at least cow them into accepting that, oh yeah, the niggers have every right to be there, they've earned it. It's what Jacques Ellul in his propaganda book, which is one of the last things Pierce was reading before he died, I know, was he said that propaganda is just it's not what people think it is. It's much broader. It's you can't do propaganda on your own. You basically have to control society, and then you can lever every single official institution into repeating the same simple message, and that's what's being done racially. Every single message from every single quarter, from online porn all the way up through local news, through Hollywood movies, conveys the same message, which is niggers are your equals. Well, actually, they're your superiors. And you must accept it, and anyone who fights back is evil and immoral and will be quashed by the good guys and the forces of law. So when every single official vector is spewing the same garbage propaganda, people don't necessarily accept it, a lot do, but they know for sure they'd better sure as hell not oppose it. And that's where we find ourselves. And we represent a small underground voice that's speaking the truth about these things, uncowed, plainly, without having to fear it, what any advertiser will yank their funding, or that anyone will fire us. But that's the status to which honest free thought has been reduced in America, so... Most white nations, it's not even legal to say what we're saying, and Craig can address that firsthand. Canada, for example, what we're saying is a criminal act.
Gee, maybe you can just chronicle briefly, because the last
Craig, tell us your history with regard to the international politics and hate speech and thought crimes.
Well, let me just talk about Canada, because I can't get that out of my brain after you mentioned it, and here's why. Walking around Vancouver, Canada, I'm not talking to the other cities. I've been in all the major cities except the Maritimes. But anyway, I hadn't been there in some decades. And there's a SkyTrain. It's a very beautiful, if you like urban transportation, it's very efficient and it's elevated in many places. And it's a big loop of several miles. You know, it takes about, I think, roughly an hour and a half to go around at all the stops. It goes fast. All Chinese inhabited and East Indian inhabited high rises. And if you see a white woman on the streets, I would actually stop. You know, they would be, I don't know, 20 years younger and coming out of CBC or wherever, some legal office, and I'd say, stop and give them some compliments such as, you look very European. And then they say, you dress very stylish. It's different for around here, or something like that. They like it, and so, the occasional one might be put off. But the point is, it's like some Jewish Rod Serling written Twilight Zone special, because they're so kind and so creepy. And if you're just in a coffee shop and you just say something slightly untoward, such as, guys, it's pretty obvious to everybody whites are a minority around here in this city, I mean, they would look at you as if they're seriously considering calling the police immediately. It's very, very frightening and eerie. And I can't. There's a street there, Robson Street, and it's very Tony with, you know, shops and everything. Lots of shops where the kids go for clothes, you know, they like to be well-dressed. The Chinese will literally walk five or seven abreast, or Middle Easterners, young people in their 20s and 30s. I just keep walking right through them, right up to the end, you know, just to see what had happened. And many times I hit chest to chest with people. They do this purposely. Whites do not do that, in my experience. You know, there might be the occasional, you know, kids who are all drunked up would do something like that in smaller towns, but this is what we have in Canada. And these people, there's 600,000 Chinese in Vancouver, 500,000 East Indians. Whites are the minority there. Nobody's talking about it. These are the numbers. There's a joke that, what's the body of water that separates China from India? And the answer is the Burrard Inlet. and everything in universities everywhere is cantilever to these people. And if you have the nerve to even suggest that you're going to stand for your rights and everything, basically they're going to work you through algorithms to show you, to prove you wrong. And that's what happened to me. But
now, Jane, wouldn't you technically be in a Canadian jail had they been able to physically incarcerate you?
Yeah, I guess at this point I would be, because when I was arrested, I think it was in April, around April 19th or 20th, something like that. at the seventh floor of the library in Vancouver, and Corporal Faulkner came by and he dragged a magazine by this desk I was sitting at. You know, they write it up, speaking of writing, Alex, they write these things up, you guys, and they make it every little detail. I was standing at a terminal, you know, like I'm a, you know, there was some three-quarter...
Were you hate standing?
Yeah, that's mink
hate?
Coat. I had to do my hate and run away. I flashed my mink coat, showed my cock, and ran off, you know? Every little detail they micromanaged. So I was not standing. I was sitting in the 7th floor private book collection or private collection. And I'd seen these guys surveil me before because they wore these little cameras around their neck. I'd like to get one of those, too. But anyway, and I was pretty sure that's who they were. They didn't look like amateur scholars to me. Anyway, so Corporal Faulkner, he dragged this magazine along the desk. So when someone invades your space along my little desk, where I was plugged in, I had my Mac open, just open it. So I knew something was wrong. I thought he might be an anti who was going to attack me, either that or a cop. It flashed real quick, but then he got behind me and said, "Paul Craig, off, do not move. You're under arrest." And he got all excited and had me in a half Nelson or whatever you call it back there. And I said, "Does it look like I'm resistant?" You know? And that's another thing. See, the antis write all this stuff. They said I ran away and ran here and they catch. That's all lies. You know? Because they've learned this. They've learned this, you guys. They've learned this over many decades to dress reality the way they want to. Like you said about Christians, Alex. Christians have learned through centuries that by going along with something that's clearly a fiction, by pretending something is reality, it is reality. Well, it's not. And then the Jews used that. But anyway...
Yeah, the truth is the loudest voice that can shout down all the others, not some objective thing that has meaning.
They're saved by God.
Yeah, well, like one time I was up there and these Chinese kids come up, talk about power trips. They come up there and then they like to go in groups. So at certain times of the day, they go right to the 7th floor because it's real quiet. It's a nice library. Some Jew designed it. As a matter of fact, the design of the library, I don't know, it's like 10, 12 stories maybe, or at least 8 or 9. But it looks like the Colosseum. You know how the Colosseum, like, or like a ruin that's partially broken down. And it was the same Jew who did some things at Expo 67. I can't remember his name, this architect. Anyway, the chinks come up there, right? And they're all aged, say, 14 to 22, and all gaggles of them. But the total number of gaggles are like 80 or 60, you know, sitting in this big room. And they're just talking to beat the band. And you ask them to be quiet a few times, and they look at you like, "Oh, that old man over there, fucking Aqualung. Look at him, ha ha." And one time I told him, "Look, this is not a dim sum." I said, "If you want to socialize like that, go to the dim sum palace." And so pretty soon, yeah, they didn't like that. And there's a big security of these libraries. It looks like something out of a spy movie. They've got cameras all down in there because I saw them. They took me down there and got arrested. Anyway, one of those guys comes upstairs, and he was about ready to call the cops too. He says, "They said that you uttered a racial hate to them." I said, I told them to go to a dim sum palace. Doesn't that make sense? If you want to party and have fun, I said, they like to eat their ethnic food, don't they? I said, I know I do. You know, I like chink food. But they pervert everything into that, you guys. And all you listeners, you must know this. Canada is a very, very spooky place, and it's coming for you, too. It's already gotten most of you because we can't fight back in our own lands. We can't fight back with words, and I think that's why I really appreciate all the help you people have all sent me, all the listeners and the VNN people. I want to have a chance to say that, and I must say, too, that I think that you're very easily able to project yourself in a similar kind of situation as mine because you experience it in many levels at work and at schools and everything else. But we're to the point where we're either going to physically fight and a few of us will pass away very rapidly and dramatically and with much, actually, probably to the put downs of our own white nationalists, I would not doubt, because it's gotten that far too. You know, the order was all cool, but anybody who does it since then is psychotic.
Anyway. Craig, what was it, was there one specific thing that set off the Canadian thought police?
One of them was they were having, Alex, a thing at Braid Sky train station, as I told you. And they picked Braid. I guess there's a few lingering whites over there. But anyway, so I went over there to film it. It was supposedly a big Nazi rally. And I thought, yeah, I'll bet, you know. And they found it on Facebook or something. So they thought maybe six people would show up, maybe 20, maybe 40. Nobody really knew. But instead what happened, all these oldsters like me, with gray hair out there singing the Communist International, and they have big posters with rainbow and all these queers, one guy in a wheelchair with a, I don't know, rainbow sherbet color balloon or something. He was a Jew, just Jews everywhere, singing the Communist International, and one cop tells me, he's a sergeant, he didn't know who I was, and he says, I can't believe any Nazis would show up here. He says, with this kind of good people crowd and everything, I thought, wow, these guys are really cooked. This is the cop. And the RCMP, where they filming? And anyway, I put that whole video to the Communist International music, and then they put an article in the Sun. See, these anti-racists up there, they ferret out anybody who still thinks they might be white. It's pretty bad. It's dreadful. And it's coming here. We just have a little different version of it. We can see with all these international revolutions going on even this week, Tunisia, Egypt, and before that in Greece and Iceland and France. So get ready for it. It's very real. It's going to happen real suddenly. We're broke. And you guys, nobody's doing much of anything quite yet. So that's what set him off, that particular video. I think Aegis remembers it. I had one of them in there, one black woman. She comes in quite go-go boots. She probably thought she was good looking. You know, she was slim and pink, so I said Angel Food McSpade was there signing autographs. She was some little reporteress. And they chased this one kid down the SkyTrain station. I told him, look out, buddy. I said, they'll push you off here, right into the tracks and murder you. And with one little kid, 19, oh yeah, and his friend finally showed up. He's about 18. And a big to-do of nothing. Tempest in a teapot. And meanwhile, the real chaos is everywhere about them, and if you make reference to it, you'll be in prison.
You made the trek across the border, and that was the only thing that's keeping you out of a jail cell.
Yeah, I took a bus to Elko. There was this Jewess behind me she got off Coquitlam. I forget where she got off. Anyway, she was telling a bunch of lies on the phone that she was in her apartment right now and just waiting to this and that. I thought that was hilarious. I took the bus to a little town called Elko, which is close to Fernie and past Nelson. And then on Dominion Day, which is the national, it's like July 4th. Anyway, I started walking and I got out by the 3rd. And I walked some places up about 4,400 feet, real nice. But I was afraid of grizzly bears. And I had one of those flare pins for a while. And then my knee gave out, but... And then I would take water. What I would do is I'd walk 100 yards and carry all the water. People said, oh, you can get water up there. Well, you couldn't. It was foul. But I did have a Mylar sheet. I'd walk the water 100 yards, then walk back, get the pack, and see, shuttle it and drink it little by little. Anyway, I made it.
Craig, have you seen any attempt by American authorities to hound you or inquire about this Canadian thing? Or
you know, Alex... This Rita Katz, you remember her? We did Goy Fires about her. You remember that? Her?
She was
the Iraq one. And every time a Bin Laden video comes out and the networks get it, it's already emblazoned with that SITE, which is what? Search for International Terrorists. What's the E for? We were laughing the other day, you and I, about this. It's kind of a SETI. What'd you say about the atmosphere? It was pretty funny. But anyway, this Rita Katz has recently begun to cover me, and that's a bad sign. She was an Iraqi Jewess, and now she's in the States. And as I say, for some strange reason, all Al-Qaeda videos go straight to Rita Katz, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much an indicator she's one of those Mossad outlets.
Yeah, her mom actually was one of the founders of Mossad, and of course the Rothschild family, for those of you who don't know, also financed the founding of Mossad, your friendly Federal Reserve boss.
Bayanim, the local Jews who served the Mossad, they're private Jews.
Yeah, there are people who say, and I think it's so, they're using right now, I think, the United States Justice Department and particularly DHS, Department of Homeland Security. And so these organizations, ADL, SPLC, and Mossad, not in that order, of course, we know which order it goes in, and One People's Project, they work with your kind, friendly local police department. In my particular case in Canada, some of those facts that they let out about me could not have been known by anyone except the police. But for some reason, the ARA in Canada had all these interesting, curious facts. Now, I won't say which ones of them were true and which weren't, perhaps, But the point is, they cleverly, just like in that case some years ago in L.A., in which I think the ADL lost $10 million, some couple million anyway.
San Francisco is where that was.
Yeah, excuse me. But I think they used the LAPD too, but anyway.
Yeah, L.A. was peripherally involved, I believe, but it was mainly out of San Francisco.
Right. So this is not some fantasy we're having. What Alex just said about that book that Dr. Pierce was reading, I've felt this in my own life and just doing this and for year after year. And sometimes I think, you actually have thoughts. Is there something wrong with me? Why do I see all this and other people don't see it or aren't willing to react? So it's a very powerful thing, this troposphere they create through media every day, whether it's Glenn Beck or Michael Savage. That fucking Michael Savage is up there. He's you know what he's talking about, Alex? And he just he's talking. He takes his poodle to restaurants in Marin County, and the poodle, he orders a hamburger with no salt and pepper and no onions, and puts it down on the floor. But his cute little poodle likes to sit up in a chair, so oftentimes he'll jump up on a chair. And then Michael Savage is telling you about his 40-ton yacht, which when he opens it up, he's drinking 350 gallons an hour. He likes to go under the Golden Gate Bridge, and he can afford it. And then he'll talk about how to cook in copperware. I mean, our society is falling apart. It's an utter chaos. Our people are deracinated and dispirited, and this is what they get. And then he adds too, he's never met an Israeli he's ever liked. Never met one, but he sure does like Israel. And if Israel goes, we go. So these people, we're being propagandized on so many levels. I mean, it's just a big giant funny farm.
I mean, there could not be an easier intellectual argument to make than the case against Israel.
Yeah.
And yet the Christian morons simply aren't interested. They'll only change their mind when the bought preacher starts singing the other tune, when the different guy or the other guy buys the preacher back from the Jews. But what kind of a people would be proud of being sheep or being naive or being unsophisticated or being dumb or think that any kind of learning, wit, or superiority is signs of immorality? Only Christians think like that.
Yeah, but we see even in conservative circles that they all have problems with authority and with the tradition that the church represents. It's a very bad tradition, and that's what thinking people need to understand. It certainly has no authority over anything and needs to be uprooted as a moral authority on basically any issue.
Well, the problem is they associate the good things in white society with the church, but they're not caused by the church. The church is a free rider on the white race. Whites don't need the church to survive and thrive. The church needs whites. And as it spreads and becomes a non-white majority religion, I mean, you will not see the fine civilization you've seen in the white land.
Well, even more, it's been a hindrance to civilization, which has been witnessed not just in Rome, but in the Renaissance.
The Romans considered them troublemakers, and I think they had fire brigades because, of course, Rome burnt one time completely. I think it was right about the time of was it Caligula? Anyway, the point is they had these fire brigades, and they always got into politics, which is really what they're in the United States, too. Alex made the point one time recently, I was reading that, when you said that something about how the Catholics in particular, but all Christians, find great offense with white nationalism, and that the true reason, the underlying one, is that they know that race, as you just said, trumps everything else. It existed before then. The DNA evolved way before Christianity came, and even the Greeks came before Jesus, which is not what that fat Hottentot on The View says. She thought that Jesus had been there a long time before the Greeks, but so they can basically just say everything. She said the earth was flat, too. But I mean, this is how far it gets. And this woman's probably making, I don't know, half a million bucks a year, if not more, probably more than you. But
Well, Craig, you know what the interesting thing to me is, and I got this from reading E. Michael Jones over CultureWars.com, or I was inspired to think the thought that led to this conclusion, which I haven't seen anyone else write or speculate on, but it occurred to me, why does the church has a spitting hatred of Nazism,
mm-hmm.
whereas it's merely opposed to communism. And yet, mm-hmm. if you look at how the two treated the church, the Nazis more or less forced the Christians into line with the politics, or didn't allow them openly to oppose them. But beyond that, they really didn't do that much besides throwing a few of the more politically active communist priests or communist-leaning priests in jail. But the communists, by contrast, killed all kinds of Christians in Russia. They rounded them up. They destroyed their churches or turned them into museums or some other Soviet institution. And in general, were extremely oppressive. And yet, when you read the way the church, people like Jones, write about the communists, they lack that emotional hatred that they have for the fascists or the Nazis. And I was thinking, why is that? Because objectively, the one treated them so much worse, yet they have they reserve their real, genuine, heartfelt hatred for the other. And the reason I finally realized is, communism is not a genuine alternative to Christianity. It's so obviously bad and wrong that no matter how long it lasts, eventually it's going to run out and wear off. But something like Nazism actually offers a spiritual solution that's better than what the church has. And so it actually represents the real threat to Christianity. And I think you get a real sense of that when you see those Nazi films and show how Hitler was received and how the population liked him. And how Germany was really flourishing under his rule. And you know also that he had people around him like Rosenberg who planned to Aryanize Christianity, to prune it of the Semitic elements and turn it into, basically re-Aryanize it as much as possible. I don't think it's really possible, but certainly that was the general idea that they were going to pursue over the longer term. And I think that the church, smart guys like Jones, correctly realized that there is a genuine existential, vital threat to the church posed by a true racially focused society. I don't even want to say racial religion, but a true spiritual option based in race, collective race, a society built on race that is not present in Christianity, that is, if you will, specificity as opposed to Catholicity, that is something specific to white people and their spiritual needs as opposed to Catholic, which means general or open to anybody. And you have
right. Well, they were looking to revive Germanic mysticism and other forms of religiosity,
yes.
using the sense of something greater than the individual, with rights and other things, completely outside of the Christian models. All that stuff that the Christianity has can be done without Christianity.
Christianity itself mostly took from earlier pagan things.
Correct.
They're trying to make Germany, if you look at their style of their sculptures, like the Brecker that Dr. Pierce liked, and that kind of thing, that kind of heroic model, their model, it's neoclassical, it's modeled on the Greek stuff, so they're trying to say there's a line from Greece to Rome to now 30s Germany. That's
right.
The tradition they're trying to pick up on and run with.
Rosenberg's mother was Estonian, as I recall, and there are a lot of buildings in Tallinn which were designed by him, and he's really much respected there, if I recall that point of history correctly. And
I'm trying to recall, he was like the only one who had direct experience of like the commie takeover and the misery that it created out of the inner circle, if I recall correctly.
You know, I hope it dovetails with that. I would like to say that these Americans, and you know, we're all Americans, at the three of us, and probably almost all of our listeners, or a lot of them, the majority, a lot of them, and usually they're the ones who are sort of provincial Christians, most frequently. They sort of, I guess they're listening to talk show hosts talking about the socialist in Europe and all this, and Europe's a big place, there are a lot of different cultures and everything, but where I was, I will tell you that they have a great respect for learning and institutions and the value of those, because I basically wasted my life on it, and not Christianity, but the Eastern stuff, some Christianity too, and a lot of times they'll fool Jesus in there and say, well, he was one of the extra avatars, you know, he was the avatar of compassion, you know, just all kinds of poppycock. Mayor Baba used to find the musts of India on the streets of Calcutta. I've been to Calcutta and Bombay, so they found this guy and he's shitting himself and he's got dried feces all over him. But he's one of the seven perfect masters. Yeah, right. And you people are buying all kinds of levels of this. Meanwhile, your science society, oh, by the way, are already gone.
Problem is, Shane, they get them early. Then you have all these big churches around. It's built up everywhere. Every small town has one. And everybody just seems to go along with the show. But
Hey, you know what this guy here says? He says that there's so many churches around here. I'm up in the Northwest. When somebody gets in an argument with his little congregation, you know, he could just be a parishioner, they just go build a new church. You know, the guys are handy with their hands and they get a few thousand bucks together. But a lot of them are going broke nowadays, according to a link by Drudge. But in other words, it's like a social club with either throw in the $14 billion or $14 billion light years away magic show and say, look at the stars. We don't know what it is, but Jesus, by God, he does, and his dad.
In our circles, at least, it's a done deal. Christians just don't make the cut.
Yeah, that's correct. And I don't mean these CIs are. Put them on CSI or something because they're cooked too.
Well, we got the Grim Sleeper, L.A. serial killer Lonnie David Franklin Jr., 57. Charged in connection with 10 counts of murder and 1 count of attempted murder, crimes that occurred in South L.A. and spanned 3 decades, prosecutors have said.
That is one competent nigger. Now, folks, keep in mind, we began the show talking about niggers fucking pigs. We moved on to niggers assaulting white teenagers trying to help them with thrift. And now we wrap up our nigger crime tripartite story with a story of a nigger who's been an active serial killer for 3 decades. Yes, that's right. A nigger serial killer active for decades that you've never heard of unless you live in the Great Southland. Call L.A. and that region.
Wikipedia has a good write-up on him. I guess the Jews over there. That one of his victims, the only one to live out of perhaps 180, she said he had a orange Pinto with a white stripe down the middle. And when she got in, according to Wikipedia, she was very impressed with the nattiness of his marble-sized gear shifter and his quilted white upholstery.
Coming straight out of Compton, dangerous motherfucker racing hell.
So, but at first she didn't want to talk to him, but he kept talking as they're wont to do, and so she ended up getting shot in the chest. At one point during the car ride, he pulled out a small caliber weapon, like in the old West, you know, these little .32 or something, you know, just for the bar, just to let somebody know, hey, you've been shot. How's that? They don't want to be a killer because maybe he's not into necrophiliac every single time. But anyway, she woke up at a flash of a camera, and he had taken her a picture, and he had just banged her. And she said, please take me to the hospital. Imagine, he just screwed her with a hole in the chest. So you can say that's better than spending $250,000 like Bama Boo, but nigritude comes in many flavors.
So now, guys, I haven't followed this overly closely, but the key here is this is an older nigger. He's like late 50s, like 57, been doing this for decades. He's how many people has he actually killed?
He's ready to retire.
They don't know. It sounds like it says. Well, has he killed 72 people, or am I misreading?
Well, no, the 72. What is it? He had a big picture collection, and there were 180, and they knocked off 72 of them. So then he's down to 120 or something, 110 or something.
Yeah.
And then recently they say there may be 10, but the point is he's not getting the publicity of Ted Bundy. And you know, when I made those videos of Pod Blanc about the serial killers, there is at least one honest PhD in this country that proved that statistically, for their numbers in the population, they're committing, they're basically like almost 3 times as likely to be a serial killer as a white. And I know that it's hard for people to grok, but it's something along that order.
Yeah, pedophiles,
they were
and
very
criminals.
I've had multiple people very vociferously insist to me that, that white men are serial killers and child molesters, and you tell them, no, actually, if you look at the facts, blacks commit those disproportionately per capita, just like every other crime. Just it's a little less disproportionate than the regular crimes, so that the media use it to pretend that that white men are the all-stars in those categories.
Yeah.
Not the fact.
That's just more like a white Twilight Zone troposphere.
Yeah, and this nigger has killed 10 in L.A. The good news is apparently all the ones he's killed are niggers, or maybe they're Latin mixes as well, but they're not, they don't seem to be white.
Well, there are some few in there, and they're good-looking. The white ones that are there are real good-looking.
That are victims that he actually killed, or that he's suspected of killing?
And I'm not sure. You know, that's not talk about media. They're not, again, they don't get into the nitty-gritty. I'd like to hear from him or any experts on what those last moments are like. You know, with Ted Bundy and all the rest of them, we've got HBO specials and you name it, you know, whole books written about him by... I want to hear about how glib he was, how entertaining, how his tricked out pimp, you know, maybe had the eight ball shifter, I don't know.
Once you get up over 50 victims, that's a lot of reenactments.
Yeah, I know. What's going through their mind if people like these psychological thrillers? I guess we won't see him. If we see him on Law & Order, he'll be a white guy by now.
Yes, yeah, they'll reverse the race. Seems I remember reading a longer article on this. Did the guy used to be like a cop? Honestly, can't remember.
Probably turned to crime when he didn't get a promotion.
Bureau chief, I mean, or just pure chief impersonator.
How he could do this and get away with it is what I'm saying.
I don't think they ask a lot of questions in South L.A.
Okay, so he's called a grim sleeper because he took a 14-year hiatus from his crime.
Yeah, that's not very descriptive.
Okay, you people out there, Lonnie David Franklin Jr., 57. Now he was arrested in July 2010, so about 6 months ago. So now, see if you hear anything about him.
That could be a lie, too. Maybe his frequent M.O. is just to pop him in his chest with a low caliber and to miss the heart so that, you know. I mean, couldn't you see how that would be entertaining to screw him with a hole in the chest? The titties leak or something? Yeah.
Not as fun as fucking a pig or anything. But
that's right.
I guess if you're in the city, you know, you got to make do with human women.
So maybe that was the origination of Grim Sleeper, and then when it got too nasty.
Here's what it was. So this dude is out there. He's out there killing these women and throwing them in alleys or into dumpsters back in the 80s. And they were calling him the Southside Slayer. And then he goes into a 14 years where he kind of lays low. And they didn't catch him. And then I guess he heated up again. This says, I'm looking at Wikipedia now, in May 2007, the murder of Genesia Peters, 25, was linked through DNA analysis to 11, possibly 12 unsolved murders in Los Angeles, the first of which occurred in 1985. So that right there is a 22-year span.
And then he was on unsupervised parole, and they had a rule that you're supposed to check the DNA, but because he was on an unsupervised parole for something, might have been a B&E at one point, his DNA never got checked. And, you know, there was that other guy. Wasn't he in L.A., too, who was throwing him in the garbage bins? We did him on a goy fire some years ago, but he was prolific himself. I think he was up there around 50 or something.
Well, there's even another minority aspect to this. Is the guy, okay, so they were investigating this guy all along. Well, they covered up the fact of his existence, but it was broken by L.A. Weekly investigative reporter Christine Pelisek. Brought the news of the secret 800 task force. That's what they called the 800 task force. When this girl was killed in 2007 and they realized it was linked to, you know, more than a dozen murders from 15 years ago, they created the 800 task force but didn't tell anybody about it. And Wikipedia says Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and Police Chief William Bratton had been silent on the killer's existence until this journalist revealed it. So Bratton was the big name, high priced crime fighter brought in from New York City, where I think he was cleaning things up under Giuliani until Giuliani got sick of him sharing the limelight with him and got rid of him. Then he went to L.A. So he and the Demexi mayor are not telling people about this serial killer until this chick breaks it in the news. And it says the mayor and chief never issued a press release nor warned the South Los Angeles community of the killer's continuing activities. In some cases, the alternative newspaper was the first to inform the families that their daughters had long been confirmed as victims of the serial killer. So that's the kind of quality leadership you get in a giant minority a megalopolis.
Yeah, you see how short on details, though, all those... they don't say how they found the bodies. And you know, there was that one killer we talked about, I believe, and they found like seven bodies in his house being eaten by lice and maggots and flies and everything. But none of the lurid details, they just sort of get airbrushed out.
Yeah, I mean, they could. You always, this is the thing. This is why the left is so successful. They control the media, but it's also that people don't have any imagination. That's why they're Christians. They can't. A book like Revelation would never appeal to anybody who had an actual imagination. So it's like, that's obviously solid stuff. A beast with seven heads rising out of that makes perfect sense to me. A beast with seven heads rising out of a lake of fire, that's impossible. I think that's going to happen. There's a flat-minded moron, basically. But my point is, you can take any story out there and juice it up, sex it up, portray it, make it lurid, make it interesting to the lackwits who populate our population. But they never do that with this kind of story. I mean, we remember, Shannon Christian and Chris Newsom. That could have been played to the hilt. But they didn't talk about it at all until we did a rally on it. And even then, their sole concern was not to play it up. It was goddamn to play it down.
It was even before that, BNN broke that story because the AP was trying to basically just hide the whole thing, and the BNNers just got really active. That was a real national thing that was accomplished. One of the many
things. Yeah, they don't want people to know what's actually going on, so they misrepresent quite literally everything that happened. Because reality,
yeah, not just the crime, but the financial crime.
Reality is a continual state of non-compliance with insane liberal ideology. So they have to cover it up. They don't have another option if they want to prevail. They can't debate honestly. They can't argue. They have to cover up, lie, and murder. Those are the only tools open to you if you don't like reality.
Yeah, fiat stories and fiat money.
Well, now we're to the point where the Tea Partiers watch Glenn Beck, for example. Glenn, the other day, told all the Christians to pray for Israel. Glenn, I guess, saw his mother, I believe, blow her brains out in front of him when he was young. The guy's been through a lot. He's making $15 million a year. But a good percentage of his show is talking about Christianity. And, you know, it's really interesting. He talks about Soros a lot. And somebody, the antis, whatever, they have a big screenshot, Aegis, you might remember this, of Pod Blanc, our Glenn Beck section I even had. So they know the Tea Partiers are watching, and I don't think he was covering Soros at all until Pod Blanc did way back in 2008, 2007, when we talked about Soros a lot in Rothschilds. But anyway, everything is any real call to action, you know, like the Boston Tea Party and the Sons of Freedom. They Sam Adams, all those guys, they weren't violent. They were just good fellows who'd just been a little bit fed up.
Really?
Well, that's very curious, because that's not what happened. Sons of Liberty, right? Anyway, and they keep representing that. So as soon as people realize a little bit that this is never going to work, there's Glenn Beck telling you to pray to Jesus for Israel. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. We'll go there.
Well, that leads into one of our pivots here, GOP can't rein in Tea Partiers. Two responses to Obama's 2011 State of the Union Address. The official conservative boilerplate counterpoints and the unsanctioned response made by Michelle Bachmann. The Tea Party threat to divide the conservative vote would undoubtedly prompt GOP action to either absorb the movement's least controversial viewpoints or to simply neutralize it outright if it fails to conform to establishment expectations.
I would first note the use of the controversial, which always means opposed to the regnant illiberal ideology. Nothing that promotes the liberal agenda or tries to push it even farther than it has already achieved is ever described as controversial. That will be described as breaking barriers or something positive. But if it's opposed to the Judeo-left agenda will always be described as controversial if it's not described as out-and-out hatred, racist people, like us here and on your homely gemütlich goy fire. We are the good guys. And don't you forget that.
I think it's interesting how they worded this, conform to establishment expectations.
Conform to. Yeah.
That's pretty much what the GOP is out there to do.
Well, their point is there's a rogue element within the GOP, and some of these people, you know, typically they're small businessmen who are fed up with doing the actual work while their taxes pay for all the slackers and useless people, getting together under the only option left of them, which is protests over taxes, the only one that can't be called racist. But then the minute they do that, Janine Garofalo and the rest of the Judeo-left clowns, of course, do call them racist. And so the acme was reached in that sign clutched by some youngster at one of their rallies that said, no matter what I say, no matter what it says on this sign, you're going to call it racist. That's the point. If you want to have an actual opposition party in this country, you should form it and call it the racist party. And then they'll be forced to go around saying the racist party is racist.
We tell them, thank you very much. That's what Metzger says. He says, when they call you racist, say, well, thank you very much for the compliment. Are you one too?
Yeah, see, I mean, the way politics works is one side poses a challenge to the other. If the other doesn't meet it, why, the first side is going to keep on with it. Now, just like we've seen, Jared Taylor tried to hold his rally at a hotel, his conference at a hotel, and the same clown that blocked it a couple years ago is blocking it again this year. Or I guess it was last year and this year. And, you know, the hotel breaks the contract and denies them the right to meet, and what's their response? To challenge it to a debate and then cancel the show. And it's ridiculous. The point is that when one side challenges you in one way, you have to overcome that and force them to come up with something new. And our side has never overcome, even verbally, being called racist. It has never come up with a response to that. And 99% of the time, what it does is say, oh, no, I'm not racist. I'm not racist. It gets defensive. And it's just not a way that you can win. You can't win from that position.
It's a clear frame where they have a constructive moral high ground, and from that high ground they just attack.
It's generous enough that we've given them, let's see, Atlanta, Philadelphia, New York City, East St. Louis, really Chicago for all intents and purposes, Los Angeles. I'm sure there are many I missed. You could kind of say Denver's in there with Chicago, basically lost because of all the radical white leftists. So they have all of those, and the states, or at least portions of the states they're in, and I think a lot of whites would be willing to cede those and say, yeah, have at it, you know, just stay away from our people. But we can't get there until we admit that we want our people to survive, and we admit it with our deeds day to day and moment to moment, and our words too.
Well, we have a story here, Loeffner, 6 dead, 13 injured. Giffords, Democrat, Arizona, who is in a Houston rehabilitation center, recovering from a gunshot wound to the head. Two aides also were hurt in the attack. Two other federal employees, a longtime U.S. district judge, and another Gifford aide were killed.
Pretty big story here. I don't know how closely you followed it, Craig. I didn't particularly follow it, never having heard of Giffords, who is a Jew. And... yeah, what is it? She somewhat supports. I can't remember what her. She has somewhat of a mixed bag, but basically, you know, pretty much the typical Jew agenda. And it was just kind of funny that she was shot, and that's all they ever focused on. They ignored that a judge was killed by this Loeffner guy. The only thing I got out of this was what a huge focus there was. They shot a Jew. He shot this Jew congresswoman. A big flipping deal. What about all the other people who were shot? The other point to make about it is they very quickly tried to blame it on white nationalists. They were hoping, just like at Oklahoma City and 911, to blame it on white nationalists or blame it on Muslims or the usual suspect, no matter who. Like I wrote the other day, you know, if Woody Allen shot Obama, they would call him, you know, an anti-Semitic, Hitler-loving Nazi. I mean, it's just their stock response. Anybody who does anything violent they don't like, they immediately call him a white nationalist or a white racist hater. And just the reason has nothing to do with anything that they report. And so they rapidly circulated a number of lies and ridiculous speculations about Loeffner, but in the end, it turned out, of course, that he didn't fit any of them. If anything, he was more leftist.
Well, I enjoyed the story on several levels. I think A just did too, because one thing, when these people realize that they're not going to drive people out of a hearth and home and family without any repercussions, no matter if the guy was batshit crazy, I don't care. He wrote a short story called Degenerate Casualty Number 88, and I made a little video about that because it gives a video glyph. Anybody who Googles it, the video glyph's up there now. Just on that alone. So I can't help but think that he knew some smattering, as you pointed out, of things across the political spectrum. But let me just say one pragmatic thing is this fellow used to like to go out in the desert and ping around with his spick friend, and the spick friend finally became frightened of him. You know, maybe one day Jared would just pop him in the chest or something, I think. That's what he intimated in the interviews. And he had a Jewish girlfriend, Brianna. In fact, one of the VNN posters, I linked to her at one point. And the Jews did the research on him. They claimed that perhaps he was only 1/8 Jewish, which, of course, nobody wants to marry a 1/8 Jewish if he were female, or vice versa, I would hope, for white nationalist males, because we consider them racially different from us. Whatever he was, he made history, and he made a hole in the head in Gabrielle Giffords. And I don't know if these people think they're going to walk around with 12 legionnaires of Secret Service with Israeli Uzis, but a lot of assassins. You know, you can go to John Wilkes Booth, or the guy that killed in Europe that started World War One. You know, you can parse their personalities from here to Kingdom Come, so to speak, but... He did, on some level, change history. It very much unnerved people because these people think they can do anything to destroy us. Anything. So I'm not saying he was a great theoretician or he was without problems, but for his generation, he was probably pretty normal. You know, a little bit of a, what was it, Slavia yeah. or South? Yeah. A little bit of this, little, like the Hunga, that drug you wrote about the other day. Hunga's replacing Jankum in Africa, the AIDS medicine they smoke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're buffeted by all these random influences. We don't have any institutions telling us to have pride in who we are, what we are, our history, or anything else, unless it's about Christ's insanity. You can marvel at the cathedrals in Europe. But,
He
was a doer. I'll give him that. He was a doer.
Yeah, the Jews in Loeffner reap the result of the nihilism they teach through public schools, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's all about you and your self-esteem and what you think about yourself, and they've stripped you, as Craig said, of any kind of pride or racial context from which you could derive a legitimate legitimacy and pride and be rooted and have a ground for growing from, and they've confused these kids, and you get someone on the community college level like this guy. They are creating more of this type of people through the nihilism that they've spread through their complete fucking up of every official institution in the country. So that's not an excuse, but it's definitely an explanation. There are definitely going to be more of this type of person. The motivations were not white nationalists, but as Craig said, there's a certain non-ideological outcome to this story, which is that, yeah, these people can be gotten to. And I think it put that fact a little more clearly in their mind than it was before. And, you know, if we ever had real Arab or Muslim terrorism that went after some of these neocons, I mean, I think that would be not at all surprising. I'm surprised it hasn't happened, just in light of how many hundreds of thousands of people these Jew neocons have gotten killed in this country thanks to their lies. So you would expect some rational retribution of that, but we really haven't seen it. I've often thought that there would probably be some soldiers who came back very disgruntled about what they saw and how they'd been lied to, who took revenge on some of the writers and some of the politicians who spread the lies about WMDs that got us over there in the first place, let alone produced Mossad or produced 911. And there was late news on that, too. We're not talking about this Goyfire, but newly released British intelligence shows that the whole thing was a Mossad operation, and that they were running these groups of hijackers and communicating about it through their various offices and back channels, but never being careful never to mention the targets and pretending it was the actual target was a nuclear site. But yeah, the thing with Loeffner is, yeah, you can shoot congressmen, you can just walk right up to them and shoot them, and then they die like everybody else. But the one good thing was the judge that the guy shot was the judge who had taken the ranch from the American and given it to the illegal invaders he had been fighting back against. And I believe that they were the ones who were backed by the SPLC. So,
yeah, that was the SPLC case, I do believe. Exactly.
Yeah, that wasn't the intent of the act, but the effect of the act was that this guy was delivered justice.
And you know, when they give you reams of newsprint and sound and light show TV time about how, oh, the little girl died too, the 8-year-old little girl. Well, how about in Pakistan and Afghanistan? You know, they knock out 36 people in a wedding party, and you know, you get 4 column inches in Time magazine.
So, yeah, well, that's a variation on the theme you mentioned before about Americans here. They just don't see other people as equal to themselves in terms of value. And okay, that's fine. You think you're better than those other people, but at least you can understand that they don't like being killed any more than you would. I mean, it really is pretty ridiculous the way some of these people think. Hey, you know, I don't like Pakistanis or Afghanis, but I'm sure they resent being murdered by us for bogus reasons as much as we would. Under the same, I sure as hell wouldn't like to have Afghan helicopter gunships flying over shooting down at me. I think that would kind of suck. I'd really be opposed to it. You know, I might even raise arms against it. So, you know, some of these people, geez, they really are unable to put themselves in anyone else's position. And you don't have to like the other people to put yourself in their position and see what they don't like. But any suggestion of that, you know, you scare the mass of morons, you're a Christian, oh no, we're on God's. And the worst thing Christianity ever did was bring the world, you know, this exaggerated focus on morality. So we got to be good. Well, we got to be good people. And once you, I got to be good. When you start thinking that way, instead of thinking, like, don't be a shithead. All right, don't fuck things up for other people. Just act the way you know that you should act. You don't need any codes or guides or to be taught that. It's basic in people, like sexual desire. You know how you work with other people and get along with them. Yeah, sometimes you need something clarified, but it's not that big of a deal. And they come in and make it all absolute. You know, they get people scared, and then it always gets tied up with patriotism, so that it becomes, no matter what we do, if you talk against us, you hate America. And this way of thinking is common, even up to the PhD level. You hate America.
Yeah.
You know, that's a factual, neutral factual matter that it makes a lot of sense why these other people would think the way that, well, you just hate America.
It's like the Civil War. These people turn you out if you don't agree with their pretensions.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this before. Sanctimonious madmen. The niggers must be liberated right now. God and all justice demand it. Let your
every man a John Brown.
You know, this kind of lunacy, this craziness that won't admit of any moderation or any taking into context of actual circumstances is driven by an insane ideological zealotry. It's one of the worst things that's ever happened in the world. Leave the fucking Afghanis alone. They're a bunch of people living up in the mountains. Who the fuck cares what they're doing? Leave them alone. Leave other people alone. But that's what you can't do if you're a Christian. You got to be spreading the good news. Boy,
yeah, I'd like to again remind our listeners to reread The Anti-Christian by Nietzsche. But this leads into our other pivot point, the Tunisian and Egypt riots. Question is, do we think Obama is reliable or not, said an Israeli official who declined to be named. Right now it doesn't look so. That is a question resonating across the region, not just in Israel.
I'd like to say something about this right away, if I may. I read the Telegraph article out of England, and they talked about the leaders of this thing went to some conference that was sponsored by the State Department in New York. It did not say New York City. New York. Really? Maybe they're up in the Catskills. Well, let me look that up. So it was right there in New York City. It's called a Youth Alliance Movement or Alliance for Youth Movement. I forget. I think it's AYM. Anyway, here's the, get this.
some kike by the name of Jared Cohen, currently age 29, back in 2008, 27, working for the State Department. Jared does. I listened to his video. He's on with Richard Haass, who's the head of the CFR. Old Jared Cohen's in the CFR, too, at the ripe old age of 26 or 7 when he was doing this. And Eric Schmidt, the $5 billion man, president of Google, who recently sold $3 or $5 million of his stock for a little pocket change. So they were given this thing. I've got the YouTube thing linked to my vid. So Eric Schmidt and Jared, Jared used the phrase, you know, at least, and I'm not exaggerating, 80 times in the half an hour or 45 minutes of this speech, probably 45 minutes, 80 times, you know, you know, you know. Now, that's a small man anything, but he is a Rhodes Scholar, after all. And secondly, Mr. Cohen went seamlessly from the State Department in charge of Google Ideas now. So if you go to movements.org, and there's another guy in there by the name of Jason Liebman, L-I-E-B-M-A-N, and he, you'll like this, Aegis, he started this video site. I think it's called some kind of how-to videos, a year after we did Paul Blanc. And, of course, he's probably millions of dollars worth now. But and he's successful, too. And then there's another one by the name of Dustin Moskovitz. And Dustin Moskovitz is a big Facebook executive, one of the top guys. Now, subsequent to that first Telegraph story, the New York Times mentioned in a piece that they referred to it, too, the 2008 meeting, and that was in New York City. So they said that all this revolution all was planned with social media. Now, even though the Internet's knocked out in Egypt, they can still use cell phones. You're working on 3G, and it's a little slower, but they can use it. And if you go to movements.org right now, they've got all this stuff about Egypt all over. They're all the freedom seekers. They get these secular youth in there. It knocks out the one-third Muslim Brotherhood right away. Plus, it makes an area of, or a whole new clientele of youth consumers who will be under the Jewish magical sound and light show of we rule the world for the next 30 or 40 years. You know, Mubarak and his clan are getting a little old, up in their 80s. And more specifically, it knocks out the Muslim Brotherhood. But anyway, are we? Let me ask you this: when the chaos comes to the United States, and they're picking up people and everything, and saying, "Well, we had to do it for our freedom," and that dyke at the Walmart, Napolitano is broadcasting 24/7. Are they going to call us freedom finders or freedom seekers like they are over there in Egypt? Are we going to be freedom seekers here in the U.S.? Because that's going to be great. It's going to be great to be known as a freedom seeker all of a sudden instead of a hater. And I'm really excited about it. I think you guys should be too. You're moving on up, you know?
Yeah, well, so, there were some interesting, like the 10 points that listed by Prison Planet. And one of them was during a revolution, outside influences become active. And basically, everybody looks to see what piece of the pie they can cut up for themselves. And of course, Egypt's next-door neighbors are pretty well-known for meddling.
Well, Jared Cohen is in charge of Google Ideas, so I sarcastically called it Google Killing Ideas, because what, a couple hundred people have died so far. Nobody's talking about this story. They literally, there's nothing in the press about it. They just referred to some mysterious State Department conference, and they had it 3 years, I guess, 8, 9, and 10, that first year in New York City. Hillary Clinton's up there on the big super screen, too. It says right there, sponsored by MTV, the State Department, YouTube, Google, and Facebook. What the fuck? These are the big corporations. They're not producing a goddamn thing. They just suck your money if you want to put an ad on Google. What are they producing? Where's their value-added product?
One of the other things is it really puts into relief what government is. It's just basically a tax racket with propaganda and military police.
And the media is just an arm of them, as you guys both say.
And, yeah, once they just start taxing the people to the point where they really can't see what the heck they're doing for them, then things get interesting.
One story said that in Egypt, over 50% of the people are on food stamps. And then I started thinking about it. That's food stamps. And they probably don't have the credit card cell as we have here. They probably literally have the stamps. And then I thought, they probably do, because all that USDA food, you know, big ton by the tons and in the big cotton burlap bags and all that goes over there, made in the USA. They probably had a bunch of those people that fly around the bush, you know, 1,000 at a time, or now Obama's got them up to, I think, 2,000 or 3,000 at a time when he flies all over like some Roman prince. And they probably said, well, let us just institute this situation here for you because everybody needs a little help here in Egypt. Here's your food stamp system. Everybody has their little food stamps, and they can swap and trade them on the sly and get plenty of rice and oatmeal and groats and everything. It's absolutely bizarre. And so we're up to, what, 42 million here. You know what? You new people in the Tea Party Congress, you need to fix our food stamps and give us 45 Hall-Nose purchase rights there in our food stamps so we can get on with it. Because things are going to get really bad when they come to pick us up for talking.
Yeah, Katarina style. Well, anyway. Getting to our last pivot tonight, Byron Jost, we got a message out of Cambodia that he had passed away and in fact was cremated on March 30th, 2010, 3 p.m. in Phnom Penh, Cambodia. The U.S. Embassy indicated that they would not be attending.
Yeah, Byron was on Goi Fire.
He was an American. He had worked in the cable TV industry. He came from Houston, where he got to know niggers and dislike them. He went out to L.A. and worked in cable, where he got to know and dislike Jews. He became an independent filmmaker. He made a film
called 7 years.
And I was briefly in there. It featured Kevin McDonald giving an intellectual backdrop to America's immigration problems, which is the subject of The Line in the Sand. Byron also did a lot of work in his second film, which I actually had even more to do with, which concerned the origins of political correctness. And it was going to feature most prominently E. Michael Jones, who you've often heard me refer to and discuss his works on Radio Athena and also some on Goi Fire, too, I believe. But,
Hey, Alex, let me just tell you, Byron told me, one of the last things he told me was that if I remember correctly, and I think I do, E. Michael Jones had not wanted him to release that because it had implications of racism for him, back to the big boogie word there, which was kind of a Catholic chimp out there.
Now, that's something I didn't know. Yeah. I would have thought he could have used the advertising, which is why I suggested him in the first place. Certainly,
I said, well, why did the guy do it in the first place then? Come on, he did all the talking. What's the big deal? You know, he went too far. He let his hair down, you know.
I told him to get Joe Sobern. He did that, too. He had Joe Sobern, whose name
was... Before Joe Sobern passed away, yeah.
Sobern is now dead. Sobern is one of the handful on the American right, semi-mainstream, semi-independent, who actually is capable of turning a phrase and having an original idea. One of the very best writers of, say, the 1970 to 2010 period. Definitely one of my favorites. And it should have been better known, but he passed away. But Byron had him on camera for this film.
And Byron would spend thousands of dollars, and he'd fly all over, he'd do whatever... As you pointed out, he knew a lot of people, and you said, I remember in your, obituary, you said that he was small and, you know, maybe small guys.
Byron was very, although he was American by origin, his family was somewhat leftist and fairly intellectual, and I think there was some falling out between him and them, but he had a very European orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And that he, when I saw him, for example, he would roll cigarettes like a European would. and he kind of had a mix of the California thing and the European thing going. He liked a lot of the stuff that more you associate with liberalism, but his politics were like ours. And he ended up going over to Europe and buying a house with Craig in Estonia and teaching English over in Russia. That was kind of the last thing he was doing before he went to Cambodia, and I guess apparently...
He had 15% of the house, and he wanted to be up there on the third floor, and he said he was going to make a big media center, and I said, man, it'll be great. Of course, we had a little bit of grandiose ideas, and he also was a son of a preacher, and he could talk pretty... he would give what you might call a spirited defense of Christianity. He said all the things that our people have accomplished, and I could never get on board with it. And I remember one point when he was living in Utah, he would flirt with the idea even of joining the Mormons because of all the beautiful women. I said, but Byron, you know that that's not really true. And he said, yeah, I know, but you know, at least they all stick together and they have family. And Byron had real piercing blue eyes. If you talk to him, and he in his best moments, face to face, like him drinking a beer in a store or something, and he would start to make intellectual points. He's a very intellectual fellow, and he would say, and then if you heard what he was saying, he would say, yeah, yeah. And he had a real high level of communication in his best moments. And obviously he had tremendous communication skills. As you said, he was the only white nationalist filmmaker who was schooled in the film.
And Craig, I think a quality that Byron had that I certainly don't have, and I think is fairly uncommon on the right in general and among white nationalists in specific, is we tend to be very prickly, almost secretive, independent, private type people, and Byron had much more of the lefty or almost feminine ability to go in between people and to be very social and friendly. I guess some on the right are in one way, they have kind of that extroverted Chester Doles type of thing, but a lot of the intellectual types are really, they're pretty much leave me the fuck alone, get the fuck off my, I know I'm that way, and that's what I really valued in Byron was, he would go to people and seek them out and dig them up, and he would do the work that's involved in maintaining relations with people.
Yeah, he would. And he'd like to talk.
That's an honest-to-God talent. It's a real talent, and you see that if you don't have it.
They call it social IQ. Mine's really low. In fact, I had to attain the age of, 59 before I even began to think of myself as normal, practically. I mean, in terms of social niceties and logic.
Craig, in part, I think that's not even a political thing. It's partly just a racial thing. Aryans need more room. We need independence, and you know what? Just stay a little farther away, and we'll get along fine. Don't crowd in on me. We don't want
to. And if we had institutions telling our kids, you're okay, I'm okay, you're okay, and by the way, here's what your branch of the white family, the Celts or Nordics or whomever did, the German tribes, and isn't that marvelous? And that's the class for today. That's the lesson, kids. They just discovered a 15 a meter long or whatever it was, a Celtic tomb in Germany. One news report out of Spiegel magazine, I guess it is. One. They're not even going to cover reality. But anyway, I understand Byron, too, Alex. You said he committed suicide, and I don't think that's absolutely correct. Although I knew at least one other friend, a Boeing engineer in Utah, and he would call him. He knew him quite well, and he would talk about that. And I said, Byron, anytime you want to talk about that or you feel like that, you call me up. And he didn't. Sometimes with alcohol, it would run people the wrong way, and he liked to drink his beer now and then. A couple of stories. I remember once we were in Estonia and a fight broke out, and I was in 8 bar fights there because if you don't fight back, they don't respect you. But anyway, I'm sorry to say that, but I literally got attacked every single time. So anyway, Byron was there one time and one broke out very close to us, and he really, really jumped. I mean, I didn't want to laugh at him. And another time I took him to this big, it's like a mini castle, and I put 2x6 floors in the second floor, and I said, come on up here, and I'll show you what I did here. And first of all, I didn't want to climb up the ladder, and then he got up there, and I said, look, it's solid, and I jumped up and down on it. But so he had not grown up he grew up in L.A., but, he's not like a guy in the Midwest or South who grew up shooting, and you know what I mean? Didn't have a military background or anything, but very intellectual. And I don't think he purposely did himself in. I think probably his service system was depressed by too many beers, and then he decided that he would take junk or something, which nobody knew.
I'm certainly not asserting anything. I have no way of knowing, nor do I have anything in my mind about it other than I know sometimes Byron would Skype me when, you know, he'd obviously been drinking some, and I think he was somewhat depressed from time to time, but I didn't know him well enough or deal with him day to day to have any deeper insight into his character than what I've expressed. So
there was once
I'll defer to you on that, Judge, certainly.
Yeah, he came to Estonia a couple of times, and one time he met this little redheaded Estonian. She was just knockout beautiful, really, she was. And she was she worked in a bank, and I can't think what else. She had, she taught kids in some level, really active for a 21 or 22 year old, and very, very cultured and well spoken. And they really hit it off, and they were kissing pretty big time. And I said, wow, Byron, I actually felt kind of jealous because, you know, men are men, but I thought, wow, you really scored with her. And they were in contact for some long while. And he was a little disappointed that didn't work out. And then he was excited about going to Russia because it was such a big country.
And, yeah, Craig, he told me very much that, you know, that when he was putting away kind of the, and I didn't know what you said about E. Michael Jones, and maybe that was the reason he, are you saying that was the reason that he didn't finish the film? He did about two.
That was part of it. He had people, one guy involved with him with helping him sort of collate it. And I said, just release what you have. And I kept trying to instigate him, and, you know, he was off on, I think he felt at his age he should have, you know, have married and have kids, and he was trying. And, you know, it's hard for guys to get, look, they've got the whole culture to where our own women basically hate us. That's fact, you know. That may seem an extreme, but unless you live in a place like maybe you do where you've been there all your life, you know, basically, or you've got $1 million or something, just like, who are you? So Byron wasn't appreciated so much for except by white males, you know, who understood his skill.
You hit on what I was going to say, which is that he told me that he was kind of drawing away from the political stuff after that film, and he was going to go to Russia and hopefully find a wife and start a family. So I thought looking good for him.
If he told you that, I'll tell you what else he told me was that we're just going to have a long slide into being like Brazil. Nobody's going to do nothing. You know, that's not how he said it in proper English. I just used the double negative. But basically, he just, and I said, come on, Byron, we don't know exactly. I said, since the fall of 2008, it's getting pretty exciting. And then he told me he was going, I was in Vancouver. I remember I was living on Pender Street, and he said, hey, I'm going to Cambodia. I said, why would you go down there? And he said, well, a lot of nice architecture. And then I think he said something about China white, and I said, what do you care about that? I said, what are you going to make a film like Bolivia or something, you know, the cocaine trade? I said, no, we don't need that kind of stuff, you know, forget it. And I just kind of put him off. And
well, I don't know, I mean, he was a sensitive, the link to the form. He did understand himself as an artist, and in a way it's sort of prophetic, the film he titled Line in the Sand. I think he had his, and you know, with the millions of Mexicans coming across the border, he didn't see anything positive happening, at least in the next couple of decades.
And Aegis, that was not his fault. He made that film. It was perfectly useful. It could have been used by all the people now who are popping up, you know, like Chris Kobach, and some of these legislatures are starting to pass laws that are imposing very, very tiny, minor infringements on these illegal shitskin invaders. Well, back then, the big guy was Tancredo. He certainly could have used Byron's film, but instead of using it to help build opposition to immigration, what he did was complain that Byron was using footage taken from his own public press conference.
Yeah.
That is the level of intellect and character of these clowns who affect to oppose immigration.
And Tancredo just missed winning governor of Colorado. You know, if these guys would have come out stronger, and Buchanan and all the rest of them, Jared Taylor, maybe we'd be somewhere now. But I want to say something else about Byron's movie and other things he did. That Line in the Sand, the rights were purchased by John Gardner, who is Yggdrasil, of course, and now he's the editor, I think, or is it Kevin McDonald's editor of Occidental Quarterly? Anyway, McDonald is, but Gardner's high up in there, I think. The point is he's on the board, I think. Anyway, Gardner bought the rights, I think, for $3,000. And then right before that, I believe they sent a copy of the DVD of The Line in the Sand to all 535 members of the Congress. I remember Byron was really excited about that. They got it, and shortly after that, they made the fence.
And I can't help but believe, I believed it at the time, too. I told him, Byron, I think that's what did it. Of course, there was a confluence of other media and stories, but when they all got that, you know, even if their 20-year-old aides looked at it and talked to another aide on the next level up, then that aide might have said to them, well, you should see this, and a certain number of them that occurred, and I bet they saw that. And back to the generation thing, you young guys, Byron's age, Byron was 36, I believe. I believe he was 36. And, you know, you two are younger too, and it bothers me that baby boomers have a lot of ability in terms of English and cultural experiences, and we're not doing enough. But there is something to be said that each 10 or 20, 10 or 15-year generation gets a certain level of dose of this political correct Frankfurt School crap that is just hard to shovel out of. And Byron got it with punk rock and some of that.
And if you don't believe me, ask your dad. And if you don't believe him, ask your mom. She tell y'all she does them all the time. It's the same hell with drugs, so you don't act like everyone else does. And there's really nothing else to say. Drugs are just bad and
high. Well, what about his last film? Is that, where can we see that film?
I don't know. I put it on Pod Blanc the day after it was confirmed that it happened, or pretty much. And so
I think I know
there's only Byron a third of it, unless they got Byron's computer back.
Byron has sent me the first hour of it.
I had it somewhere.
It was eventually planned to be like 3 hours. Yeah, he took a lot of suggestions I gave him, but he didn't take other ones. He wouldn't name it what I thought he ought to name it. I think he was too much under the sway of McDonald and the kind of the TOO guys, Gardner. They're basically conservatives at heart. Intellectually, they're white nationalists, but behaviorally and generationally, they're actually conservatives. And I think Byron was more swayed by them on that particular issue.
He actually said Alex is going off with this, and the majority. Remember when Majority Rights decided to side with you about the genocide issue and all such? Because we're in a racial fight. It's like rats or some species of rats fighting whatever. You know, we have to fight. But anyway, he said, "But that's Kevin MacDonald, Craig. Kevin MacDonald." I said, "I understand, but Alex has got the points. The MacDonald writes a different style. It's academic."
Yeah,
and
no, it's not. It's not that. I've just seen it over and over and over.
Conservatives are built to lose. It's like a car that's built to explode.
Go away, you big baboon, or I'll knock you for a roll of soup and make it soon. You're the type that should be taken out and drowned. You give me an awful pain when you're
the mechanic. They turn the key. Boom.
if you're in a fight, you shouldn't pretend it's a debate.
That's exactly that.
Ought to be the difference between white nationalism and conservatism.
Yeah. So I try
They're
to explain
the it. Edsels of the Formula One racing.
No, the point is pertains to Byron. Let me just make the point. Okay, he used a term for the title of the second movie that was never completed, which I think came from James Sanchez, who's a PhD up in Seattle. And to me,
The minority.
You ought to be sensationalistic. He should have called it, as I advised him, How the Jews Murdered America. Mm-hmm. And Brian, you got to try to make a breakthrough. You got to try for something that will get huge, that might be picked up somewhere, that might sell a million copies.
All you people out there like Melker or Yankee Jim or Byron, do not fucking internalize your angst. Do not internalize it. That's the wrong direction. Please.
Channel your energy into something productive, and there are 1,000 forms that are productive, and certainly making solid white movies is one of them. And God knows there's not enough done on political correctness, and the little that there is done on it filmically is politically correct, because it usually calls them Germans or cultural Marxists rather than fucking kikes.
You should, you know, if you guys want to get an eyeful, go look at some of these Israeli Jews or these tech Jews. Look at their Facebook friends. You'll think it's like a horror show. They're all over Israel. Do you understand? They're like, you know, ancient multimillionaires. They're just living the life of ease and luxury, and everything is easy for them. Academics. It's not because they have an intellectual predilection. It's because it's made that way by the society at large, and you've allowed. They're basically living your lives. They've taken your place, and they're living your lives. And
they're living off your money, off our money. I mean, what we fund them to the tune of $5,000 a family, that makes a lot of hotels and swimming pools and tennis courts and cushy academic sinecures.
Okay. Right.
Meanwhile, how many people are working full-time for the white cause? Not even 10 people. I doubt you could find 5 people. And they're not paid by anybody. Think about that. Jews are parasites. Parasites in the form of humans, but they're not actually humans. They're human parasites. Well, let's wrap up on Byron. The conclusion is the guy did good work. We're really sorry that he's gone, regardless of whatever caused it, accident, whatever. We miss him. I visited him in Utah when he was around, and you know, it's a tragedy when people on our side die, the people that we know and we've dealt with, and especially who are as socially valuable as he was, and the way he went between different people and tried to, you know, he's got assholes like me giving him advice on one hand, he's got to try to mediate that with other people giving him contrary advice on another hand, and he's able to navigate all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more people like him.
Well, I want to say another thing.
To it can become the new Byron. There's nothing stopping. There's better video technology than there ever was.
Yeah.
Little pictures.
Byron was a member of the Charles Martel Society, he told me. I believe him. And he said he pitched a movie there, and he told the guys he could make it for $10,000. He said he didn't really want to make the sum $10,000, but he thought maybe it was too high. But he thought if he didn't call it $10,000, they'd think he was just talking through his hat. So anyway, yeah. Some Southern lawyer stood up and said you couldn't do anything for less than 25, and even then it would be a substandard product. And these are the guys you're talking about, like Jared Taylor in their 60s, despite my age.
Yeah,
and, you
they're,
know,
they're yeah. old conservatives, no matter what their politics are. They're old conservatives. These clowns are trying to run a show through this Regnery guy. And, you know, yeah, it's great as far as they go, but like Byron told me, they're oriented towards books, not videos. So they've got shitbags like Jared Taylor scooping around trying to get their money.
Oh, honey, picture me upon your knee with tea for two and two for tea. Just me for you and you for me alone. Day will break and I'm gonna wake and start to bake a sugar cake for you to take for all the boys to see.
My knee, tea for two, and two for tea. Me for you, and you for me alone. Nobody near us to see us or hear us. No friends or relations on weekend vacations. We won't have it known, dear, that we own a telephone.
There is no solution coming out of these people. What E. Michael Jones, a Catholic intellectual, pointed out is Jared Taylor is the head of a white NAACP. And we know from what I've said on Radio Estina and we've discussed on Goyfire, That has a specific meaning. The NAACP was set up to serve Jews in the name of blacks. It has a black person out front, but it has Jews in the back office. Same with Jared Taylor. As whites awaken to the horrors we've discussed the last couple of hours, they come to look for a real solution beyond the Republicans. What do they find? Oh, they find Jared Taylor. They find Amron, which isn't ever treated the way real white nationalists are.
And despite the fact that the death of our race in our own countries, while we are dying, it's as if we've been shot and raped by the L.A. serial killer. Only the L.A. serial killer is the Jews, because we don't get any emotional or existential pleasure, very little, in the interim while we do expire. Listen, please don't say rest in peace for Byron. Byron's not in any other world or any of that.
There's no solution to the ills we face that involves Jews or partnering with Jews or working with Jews or teaming with Jews or saying Jews are white or letting them speak right for our publication. There's no solution that involves Jews. No Jews, just right.
Yes.
Jews are to be excluded. They are hostile. They are the other. They are the enemy. They are categorical enemies of our race. And that is how they see you. Whether you white person, white man, white woman listening to me agree with me or not, they see you as categorically evil because you're white. White equals... You know what a Nazi is to a Jew? It's someone with white skin. All right? Nazi, racist, hater, devil, evil, all the same thing. All that means, all those are synonyms in the Jewish mind for white people. They hate whites. All their holidays are built on their genocide of other people, and they want to add your race to that list. So,
but unlike
Jared Taylor's on our side, when Jared Taylor is working with these people, Jared Taylor fronts for these people, Jared Taylor is paid by these people, and he lets them talk to white people, and he doesn't allow white people to criticize. I mean, it's crazy.
Look, we can mock them better than they can mock us, I think, ultimately now, although we don't have as big a megaphone, but they don't, you know, they go at things in a sidelong, tricky way, whereas we'll be out front. So they'll say they want, it's a hasbara, it means explanation. That's why they have an explanation for everything. That's what their culture does, and they've done that for centuries. They used to have competitions in Poland for the every village they would, you know, debate back and forth with Talmudic logic, and the winner, they would make him a celebrity, pay for his college, pay for his further education, pay for his travels, and pretty soon they interbred. So they've been practicing eugenics too.
Their whole thing is that their men should not work, but they should sit around all day splitting hairs over the meaning of the Talmud and the Torah, and that's called pill pull, which is a word you've never heard. You're a typical Fox News watching Glenn Beck appreciating halfwit. Pilpul, P-I-L-P-U-L. Hair splitting debate. And this is what strengthens their verbal ability, which, as Craig said, is underlined, is further strengthened through their eugenics. The mating of the bright with the successful and the weeding out of the genetically defective. This over time
is Machiavellian too.
It's turned them into a sort of a head community. They don't have a body of big, broad, working class types. They have only the white collar types, and they're focused on criminally seducing, misleading, and undermining other society for their own benefit. So they're kind of a criminal, parasitic class. They've always been known to be such, and they have to control our means of communications, i.e., our mass media and our schools and our politicians, in order to keep the charade going and to keep the blood flowing. Just as a mosquito inserts an anticoagulant to speed the flow of your blood into its stomach, so must the Jew control the mass media.
You know, Alex,
yeah,
I'd like to add
banking and currency to that list.
That's the most important, perhaps.
Well, that's another way for them to steal. That's another technical means for them to steal, is control the money supply and inflate the currency. So inflation is called the silent theft, because you can't see what's happening. You can only feel the effects of it. You don't know what the source of the problem is, and it takes some intellectual work to identify where the problem is coming from. Most
That's what magic is, when you can't identify the cause, but it just happens. That's really the essence of magic, and they're big on magic, too.
All of a sudden, you walk into a Taco Bell, and you're paying $85 from your meat simulation product wrapped in crappy bread. And you're like, what the hell's going on here, man? I remember when meat simulated product was $1 per burrito. Now it's $85. What the fuck?
Yeah, they say sugar may be $62 for 2 pounds within 10 years, because the rich people, now that we're not buying TVs and cars, you know, they put it all in the commodities, and then we have to suck it up. But you know, with this Gabrielle Giffords thing, it occurred to me a new name for them. You're always encouraging those, Alex. This one would be Gabby Ruse, and the Ruse is as the suffix in Hebrews. Hebrews is a little more acceptable these days than Jews. Jews is kind of overused, so it's R-E-W-S, but the R-E-W-S morphs into R-U-S-E. So it's Gabby Ruse, and they're involved in a huge Gabby Ruse against us constantly. And then, of course, the singular would be Gabby Rue, R-U-E. And then I submitted it to Urban Dictionary, wrote it up really nicely. Didn't hear from them. Probably they're owned by Kikes too.
Is that not a self-edited, like, you know, some of those purport
yeah.
to be?
Didn't even write me back. I wrote it up, you know, just as you'd see in Oxford, really just spent a long time on it. You know, I'm not the best writer out by a long shot, but I just kept working. Didn't even answer me. But yet all these nigger terms get in there overnight.
Yeah, well, you know the double standard. You can't even edit Wikipedia. So anyone who's a critic of the Jews is defined by that fact, regardless of whatever else they have done. Oh, you're an like that's a real thing. Your position on Jews defines you. Yeah, okay.
Right, you'll get a ban on all ethnic and religious topics by the democracy behind the scenes at Wikipedia. Well, we're through the topic, so closing statements.
Okay. Craig has something he wants to discuss.
Mr. Quadrillionaire, man. You guys are really shortchanging. He's flying all over the air, flying all over 3,000 people, staying in big hotels. They built a mile-long tunnel in India above ground for him to walk through so he didn't get bombed. He's a great, great man. Sent a flotilla of ships over there with him. He told me he wasn't born in Hawaii when I drove him in 80 or 81. Barry. Really, Barry? Went to Puno, and I went to Thompson Academy. Here we were big, blue bloods together.
Very unfair of us not to cover the big O.
Yes, that is right. International thought criminal, Craig Cobb.
Now there's this geneticist, and he was born in 1922. Actually, Metzger highlighted him. I have to get his name somehow.
George R. Price.
There you go. Yeah, read that for me if you can. And he became a Christian for a while. But can you read the part, Aegis? You're such a good Walter Winchell. Although he was, I didn't mean to slur you, sir.
There are two groups of people, then the individual should favor the group that shares the most common genes. Therefore, acts of violence against unrelated outsiders can also make evolutionary sense, even if you lose your own life in the attack.
Because Kaczynski is a heavy mathematician. If you just look at the things Kaczynski wrote, you know, you might as well be reading Sanskrit. I want to write Ted Kaczynski about that. You know, Glenn Beck said he wants to buy Kaczynski's property up there, so Beck's spouting off. You know, Beck knows how to make these dramatic statements and not follow through. But anyway, this guy, he ended up giving a lot of stuff away. First he was a Christian, then he gave everything away, then he did take his own life. So, but in terms of understanding that evolutionary thing, thanks for reading that in the loop, especially about how altruism and violence are flip sides of the same protective reactivity or reaction built within us.
Alex, closing statement.
People, for the love of God, please keep your peckers out of the forcing. No more, man. That's it, man. Are you implying that wasn't heavy enough to be a closing statement?
Are you just addressing the sooty, complected biped?
Colleagues, please refrain from fucking the pig.
It's dangerous if they lie down on you. It might break your hip. That happens with horses. You know, you're riding a horse and the horse lies down and you got a broken hip. So, no, that's not worthy of you, Alex. I want to join VNN and get all your writings and publish them on all your writings so that people can understand what Christ's insanity is and all the rest of it and what their
what is this fascination you people have with truancy.
I thought you were going to say truth. I heard the what? Truth. Not truth.
I was channeling Mr. Hando for a minute. Anyway, yeah. Anything you want to find from me, you can find at VNNforum.com or VanguardNewsNetwork.com, GoVNN.com. We're a known entity. Some prime thought criminal action. I'd like to... I'd like to throw in one little bit about, you know, some guy down in Australia, of all people, of all places, was given 3 years for a video he made that included criticism of Jews. So that's the world we live in, where the kind of things you've heard the last 2 hours quite literally make you a criminal in most of the former British colonies and a hell of a lot of the rest of Europe. And just think about to what a sad estate our race has fallen, dominated by the Jews and full of the mentality of the Christian lunatics. It's a real shame, and we can do better, and we should, and this is a little seed meant to grow into a plant of betterness. I'm not a master of the metaphor yet.
Yes, anyway. Let the seed grow.